And that's the kicky music that means it's time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here around the table for the first time in forever.
Oh, so many weeks.
The entire Pop Culture Happy Hour staff. Fellas.
Get the band back together.
Finally have quorum.
Fellas.
We got our Pete Best.
You can finally oust me now that you have a quorum.
I was thinking more the Bugaloos.
Oh, I'm so happy to see all of you. Stephen, why don't you tell the nice people who you are and what you do at NPR?
Well, I am Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, back from vacation. Tell the nice people what you do at NPR when you're not on vacation.
I'm Trey Graham. I'm the movies editor at NPR. And entirely coincidentally, I am also a guy who can go to Florida for a week and a half and get not an ounce of sun.
Good for you.
Nice. Good for you. Well done. Nice. Well done.
Positively Weldonian.
Glenn Weldon, what do you do for NPR?
I write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
Well, I'm so very, very glad to have all of you back.
It's I just want us to sit here and just look at each other.
That's what we're doing right now.
That's going to make a great podcast.
We're gazing lovingly at each other on the radio.
That's right. That's good radio.
Absolutely perfect. Well, today is Tuesday, as we sometimes tape on Tuesdays. And yesterday, Monday, was the beginning of school for many.
For many.
So we thought that this would be a good time to touch a little bit on the topic of schools. Some pop culture schools, perhaps some movie schools, book schools, TV schools, schools that you love or, in the alternative, perhaps that you fear. That's okay, too. Mm-hmm. You know, we cover the gambit around here.
Well, seeing as how we have two school-aged children in the studio with us.
We do. Where did they come from?
That's a different podcast. I'm not ready to talk about that with them in the room.
We need Krulwich for that one.
Stephen, why don't you open up with a pop culture school you'd like to talk about?
Well, first of all, I have a little pop culture school-related confession to
make,
which is that I have never seen Freaks and Geeks or Undeclared.
Wow.
How have you?
Probably because I was too busy watching, people eat bugs for money.
Mm. How did you live this long?
You know, that's a good question just in general.
Never see, but well, you should definitely see Freaks and Geeks.
I'm just running out the clock at this point.
Freaks and Geeks is notable, if only for its bizarre spotting of future talent.
Mm. Right.
You know, Seth Rogen's in that, James Franco's in that, Jason Segel's in that.
But you guys are big Freaks and Geeks people, right?
I am.
Like, everybody I know is like a big Freaks and Geeks person. This should be like a pop culture blind spot, except I'm more than notionally open. I'm assuming I'll love it.
Oh, mm-hmm. I think you will love it.
But is it like a more truthful depiction of school than we usually get in pop culture schools?
I think so. I mean, it has that tinge of school as unrelenting horror show, which I think is more the way people remember it than the way it necessarily is at the time.
You're saying it's not Rydell High going on?
It definitely has the sense of, you know, school just being a kind of terrible, miserable day-to-day slog. Mm-hmm.
That does sound truthful.
Yeah.
But it's funny that you should mention the school as a hotbed of monsters because, of course, naturally, one of the school that sprung immediately to mind was Sunnydale High in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and in particular, the scene in the episode where Buffy can read thoughts. Mm-hmm. The episode is called Earshot, and she runs afoul of a demon and blah, 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 and suddenly she can read everybody's thoughts. And it was actually the episode that, because of Columbine, got shelved for a few months. Mm-hmm. It's one of my very, very, very favorite episodes of the show, and there's an amazing monologue at the end of the episode where she's face-to-face with someone who has sort of had enough of high school life, and they're sort of monologuing back and forth, and he's basically like, everybody thinks I'm a jerk, everybody thinks I'm an idiot, everybody thinks I'm this and that. And she says, you know, because of course she's spent this entire episode suffering from the fact that she can hear thoughts,
right?
Like, nobody thinks that, nobody thinks of you at all. Mm-hmm. Because they're all worried about their own crap.
Right. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, Jonathan, I understand about the pain.
Oh, right. Because the burden of being beautiful and athletic, that's a crippler.
You know what? I was wrong. You are an idiot. My life happens to, on occasion, suck beyond the telling of it. Sometimes more than I can handle. And it's not just mine. Every single person down there is ignoring your pain because they're too busy with their own. Beautiful ones. Popular ones. guys to pick on you. Everyone. You could hear what they were feeling. Loneliness, the confusion. It looks quiet down there. It's not. It's deafening.
I'm sure there is someone out there who has this entire monologue tattooed on his or her body, because it is just this incredible, like, words to live by, like, lesson about high school.
It is remarkably encouraging in a way. It's actually
I found it very liberating.
Yeah, it really is. It's really smart about that age. It's got a nice dark tinge to it, but man, those words really hit home.
So Sunnydale, Hellmouth aside.
Hellmouth aside.
Any other ones? Trey Graham, Pop Culture School.
I would like to plead that we have no discussion whatsoever of Hogwarts in this episode, but I do want to talk briefly about Breakbills, which is the sort of grimmer but equally magical institution of higher learning that the protagonist attends in The Magician, Lev Grossman's novel that's kind of like a grown-up American Harry Potter with dirt.
Dirt as in smut?
No.
Harry Potter fan fiction is like that.
Oh, God. Without wishing to talk too much about Hogwarts, Hogwarts is a place where Harry Potter doesn't like to do the work, but gets everything right anyway.
I'm going to declare a moratorium on talking about Hogwarts. Now, well, unlike Hogwarts...
I have to frame it, though. Harry Potter goes to Hogwarts, and he's not a great student, but he gets everything done anyway. At Breakbills, the protagonist is a grind. And he discovers that magic is a thing you're talented at and you have a gift for, but it's also incredibly technical and you have to learn a lot of nonsense, stupid finger positions and words and all kinds of... It's like calculus for those of us who cover the arts. It's like, you know, it's like physics. It's like all these things that you have to memorize. And that's what I like about it, is that it, with any luck, it will remind people that once they had a dream of going to an institution of higher learning and expanding their mind and becoming a larger and warmer human being, and they got there and they had to do the damn times tables or something. I don't know, whatever you study in college level math, because it's not like I ever did.
It is not times tables.
Ah, the humanities.
But we talked about the Glee High School. I was going to mention the Fame High School, of course, which was highly influential in my life when I was a wee baby budding arts junkie.
Sure.
And then there's the school in Election, which of course prepared me for real life and for office politics.
And for student government. If you have ever been involved in student government, it is so truthful.
Yeah.
But I think my favorite school that I can think of on relatively short notice, because let's face it, I didn't really do a lot of homework for this podcast. I've just come back from vacation, people. Is the Princeton of 1999, as it is described in a novel called The Rule of Four, which is a book I enjoyed tremendously. It's about four friends who are about to graduate from Princeton and who are trying to solve a mystery encoded on the pages of the Hypnerotomachia Polyphili. This book, this novel.
Yeah, I was totally going to say that. This one.
This is a real book. This is a real historical book. But the story of these guys trying to unpack its meaning is a cipher mystery and a treasure hunt mystery. And this book is a great read. But its description of the Princeton campus is just great fun. It's tremendously atmospheric. But even more so, I was really taken by the description of the craziness that can build up in the mind of a scholar who's driving himself completely insane, pursuing a breakthrough that's just almost there, but agonizingly out of reach at the same time, which is something, quite frankly, that comes through in The Magicians, too, and it's another reason that I like that book so much.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very good. Very good choices, Trey Graham. Glenn Weldon, Pop Culture School.
I have one thing to say to you people.
And what would that be?
You're finished at Westerberg. Transfer to Washington. Transfer to Jefferson. No one at Westerberg is going to play your little reindeer games. That is a line from the 1988 film Heather. As is this. Did you hear? School's canceled today because Kurt and Ram killed themselves in a repressed homosexual suicide pact. I didn't recognize my high school in any John Hughes film ever, because those high schools had hope and,
and happy endings.
And redemption.
Happy endings and redemption.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where John Hughes films have hearts, Heather's has a blackened, desiccated husk. Where John Hughes went out of his way to capture the actual slang that teenagers were saying at the time, Heather's just made it up.
Yes.
Where John Hughes films tried to recreate the music of the time. So every time you see one, it's very nostalgic. Heathers doesn't really use music, or especially contemporary music at all. And the one contemporary song it does use is a fake. It's made up.
Right.
Called Teenage Suicide.
Don't do it.
I just love this film. And I love its depiction of high school, because it does feel truthful in a way. This is the John Hughes film for the rest of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a book came out recently. A book came out actually this summer called Heathers by John Ross Bowie. It's part of the Deep Focus series, which is a series of very slim books which takes a look at individual films and analyzes them, but not in a dry academic way, but in a culturally, it's basically cultural analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to be very personal. And this book pointed out several things that I didn't realize about Heathers. One is its use of color, which it probably really should have come through.
The red heathers.
The red heathers, the blue. The way that everything lines up with the croquet balls in the very first scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's a use of Kubrickian angles. But mostly, I've always considered the film Heathers to be a great film, but deeply flawed, because its ending feels always to me like a cop-out.
Mm-hmm.
The experience of watching this film feels like you're hurtling toward a very dark, violent place, and then the ending isn't, you know, happy peppy, but it is not true to the bones of this thing you've been watching for an hour and a half. And this book reveals that, in fact, the original script was made for a 3-hour film.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, no studio would jump at it. They also didn't jump at it because if you remember the last scene of the film, Veronica, played by Winona Ryder, kills J.D., played by Christian Slater, because he's about to blow up the school.
Spoiler.
She's 20 years old. She goes up.
Oh, you're so young.
She goes up out of the basement and walks into a pep rally and has this sort of weird look on her face, and then there's a very soft focus coda. I always thought that given everything we've seen in this film, she would turn right around and go back up and blow up the school.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's what she does in the original draft. There is a scene after that that's set in heaven where everybody is dancing in heaven. There's a prom in heaven where everybody we've seen throughout the film is joining together, free of class, free of clique. The prom in heaven scene has become very familiar. So if you have any interest in this film at all, I would recommend picking up the very slim but highly entertaining and very insightful book, Heathers, by John Ross Bowie.
It sounds like a fascinating book. I like the idea of a close and culturally specific read on on a thing like that.
It's
much like the book that I was reading as I fell asleep last night, that I was finishing up as the end of my vacation reading, which is All the Stops, the Glorious Pipe Organ, and its American Masters.
It's exactly like that book.
I am not making
that up.
You know,
we were doing Insomniac here.
That is actually what I was reading last night.
Yeah.
Surprisingly vivid. Did you know William McKinley was assassinated at a pipe organ recital?
I really did not.
Did not know that.
Who doesn't know that? Anyway, good choice. Very good. So, when I think about good schools, I invariably just find myself thinking about good teachers. And that's my bias toward teachers. I was raised by teachers and around teachers. So for me, it's always, you know, if you wanted the sky, I would ride up. It's a service love. You know, anyway, so the first one that came to my mind was Angela Chase's school on My So-Called Life, just because of the English teacher, I guess, who directed the play. And so what I always remember about him is his direction of their production of Our Town. And he was just this very accepting, loving, encouraging, positive teacher who, of course, was sort of doomed to be drummed out and persecuted and so forth. But he was wonderful, and he was available to students in an appropriate but warm and personal way. So I think about that school just because of him. It's very difficult because you, as I mentioned before, the pop culture vision of school tends to be almost entirely negative.
What's your point?
The John Hughes, and see, I think the John Hughes schools are always terrible and obviously run by idiots, and you have no chance of learning anything. The Breakfast Club with the principal who's in and out all day, sort of with the toilet seat cover flapping around behind him and all that business, making various threats and giving endless detention and digging around in the files when he's not supposed to be. So I always thought the John Hughes schools were sort of awful, funny, but awful. I mean, there was only hope in the sense that you could ignore school. There was never really hope from school. But then you also have the other vision of school, like Dead Poets Society.
Oh, God.
For example.
That's a favorite of Glenn's, I'm assuming.
Where you have... They filmed that right near my high school. People from my school were in that movie because they filmed it my senior year when I was at one of the schools right near me. They actually considered filming it at our school, but our school, something was wrong with it. There's something about light or something like that. But they scouted it out. Anyway, so that's sort of the school as the incredibly oppressive force that always makes you miserable. But definitely it was difficult for me to come up with anything, so I thought of Angela Chase's school and I thought of The Little School on the Prairie. Best thing about The Little School on the Prairie, all you really have to do is you sit there and the teacher just walks around and says, what's the capital of Arkansas? Like, that's the, maybe not Arkansas then, but, you know, what's the capital of New York?
Yeah, very tough question.
And that was school. You just sat there with your little slate tablet and the teacher walked around and asked, like, trivia questions. I think that sounds pretty rad. Like, you could be, like, 15 and you would be in school with the fourth graders. So it couldn't be too hard.
Right. You know? You're always going to be above or, well, maybe at the beginning you might be below the curve.
They were all just in the one big room together. Yeah. All of them.
I want to know how you would have done at the Marsha Blaine School for Girls, the school in the prime of Miss Jean Brody.
Mm. Oh, God.
Where she's this wonderful and, you know, charismatic teacher who is all about opening the young women's mind to ideas and taking them to art museums.
I'm constantly asking myself the same question.
And then, you know.
How would you have done at the School for Girls?
Well, when I was in high school?
And, you know, she's all about not playing by the rules, Miss Jean Brody is the teacher. And
Which
then
is odd,
you just,
she's kind of a fascist.
Then you discover that she admires Mussolini and Franco and that maybe she's not really putting the best ideas in these girls' head. And you have to come to terms with that in the book and the play.
You know, that was true of Dead Poets Society, too. He encouraged all the theater.
There's
true. You know how that.
And that ended in drama, didn't it?
Can
you know
I just say,
the theater ended badly.
The Heathers book by John Rusbowy makes the distinction between how the film Heathers treated teenage suicide and how the film Dead Poets Society treated teenage suicide. And he makes the point that what Dead Poets Society does is romanticize it. Everybody is so sad to see him go because he's too beautiful, too precious for this world. Of course he has to leave us. And suffice to say that Heathers does not take that approach.
No.
Well, no, it doesn't. I mean, you know, I don't want to get into a defense of Dead Poets Society, but I could, but I won't. I could, but I won't. We are sort of in the middle of the show, and we have two quick topical things torn straight from the headlines. The first thing that we're going to do is do our little quick pass by the VMAs, which were this Sunday, the MTV Video Music Awards, and I'm not going to tell you who it was, but one of us has asked to keep this segment short. I'm not going to say who it was.
Apparently, some people don't think the VMAs are
think
incredibly
was
important.
Boring.
Think it might have.
Oh my God, it was so boring.
Wait, did you watch it?
Yes.
You watched? You did the?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You did that for us?
Yes, only for you.
Oh, man.
Fast forwarded through
Glenn,
more than I have in the past.
See?
But
Glenn
still,
Glenn Weldon watched the VMAs for us.
Mm-hmm. So, I watched the VMAs, but I have to confess, I had not read Stephen's assignment email, and I was stranded in Philadelphia by the hurricane, and I just happened to be in, you know, one of those establishments for gentlemen of a certain persuasion.
And what are the odds?
Lo and behold, yes. Lo and behold, there were the VMAs on the television.
I see.
And some young Philadelphia gentleman of a certain persuasion screaming, Gaga, Gaga, Gaga!
Oh, that was painful. Can we agree that that was painful?
That
was really
painful. I guess
so good to see John Bowser Bowman on the television screen again.
Yeah. Or I heard.
Was it
forever.
Lenny or Squiggy that she was doing?
It was Squiggy. But
Squiggy?
The other thing I heard is that Ralph Macchio was trending during the VMAs because of that. So what we're talking about here, top headline from the VMAs is probably that Lady Gaga came out in drag, playing someone she called Joe Calderon.
Right, and I don't think the headline is that Lady Gaga had a funny outfit on. It's that Lady Gaga didn't seem to know when to stop.
Yeah.
No, it lasted.
Get
I mean, she was in drag. Holy. She was not wearing a costume.
No, she was
in drag.
She was in character. Yeah.
So she came out there and she did her opening, the really long opening speech. And then finally she did some other stuff and she performed and she gave out an award and she got an award and the entire time, nothing but Joe Calderon, who just came back and back and back and swore and threw cigarettes and, wow, it was not charming.
Whereas, no, you know, I do admire a commitment to a characterization. She was really committed, to the characterization.
She was committed.
But good Lord, it would have been much more entertaining if she... And entertainment, after all, is what Gaga is in the business of doing.
Right.
I wanted, like, a really amazing quick change and a completely different character.
Which I kind of expected.
Pink Princess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, do we like any of the performances?
I mean, I thought Adele stood out like the Hope Diamond in a pile of possum turds.
Yes, absolutely. So simple.
It's evocative.
And so classy. Like everyone else in the known universe, I love me some Adele.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that what I did not love at the VMAs, classiness of the vocal performance and the minimalism of the production aside, was Adele's fingernails. And the way that Adele's fingernails were employed.
Was she doing a little too much of the...
There was a little dramatic interpretation with the hands. And the fingernails were really, really big. And I understand that her look is sort of, I am a middle-class lady who has been to the salon recently.
Uh-huh.
But the fingernails were really distracting. That's all I'm saying.
I'm in a phase of my life right now where I'm listening to a lot of podcasts and comedy albums. I'm not listening to a lot of music, but I never felt... older than watching.
Yeah.
I mean, I sat myself down with a big bowl of penny candy. I took my liver pills, poured myself a phosphate, and it's just to keep up on the trends. Yeah. What are the kids like? Well, turns out the kids like them hip hop rappers.
Yeah,
yes.
Learn
that. They do.
The kids
and
like underwear, apparently.
And the kids
with the pants down, with the pants hanging down.
Right.
Yeah, they do. They sure do.
And wire work.
This is wire work.
It's a new trend.
I have a question, actually, about the wire work. The guy with the flying and the dancing.
Chris Brown.
Okay, thank you.
The lovely and charming Chris Brown.
Are we supposed to believe that he was singing? Because I am not convinced that he was singing.
He was dancing
really, really hard for somebody who was supposed to be singing.
Yes, he was doing a dance thing.
I have a feeling that might have been taped.
Wasn't he just lip-syncing to the original tracks
he had a microphone on his head, so they were sort of pretending that
it was very, very random performance.
Can I be forgiven for wanting him to get tangled in the wire?
A little bit, yeah.
And I also found, as we sort of survey the performers briefly, that I realized at this particular awards show, they had a tribute to Amy Winehouse that was performed by Bruno Mars.
Who, I have to confess, I thought was Lady Gaga in drag again.
I realized that I have watched enough awards shows. You know where I'm going with this because I said this to you that night.
Yeah.
That when Bruno Mars performs, I feel a sort of Pavlovian impulse to urinate because I'm so accustomed to taking my bathroom break during Bruno Mars's many incredibly boring performances.
Oh, so mean.
I find Bruno Mars is maybe the most boring,
missable,
just completely missable entertainer in America today.
Okay, fine.
Like, he seriously should be performing at a casino.
The other part that Stephen and I really enjoyed was toward the very end when Lil Wayne was performing.
Oh, yes, this was my favorite thing.
He comes out at the end and like there's all this build up and it's this big like
this is the grand finale.
It's like the grand finale and they're like bump 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 and then he's like because like the first thing out of his mouth is bleeped, so it's like it's just this.
Well, there was this horror show of a terrible auto-tuned ballad in which Lil Wayne, you realize rapper, not singer.
Right.
Then
he loves you, baby.
And then immediately it's just dun 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 dun.
We were sitting in the bar and wondering if the satellite signal was dropping out.
Oh,
and
no,
we're like, no,
no,
of
no,
course, it's just,
all,
you know, it's just the
swear,
cussing.
Those are all swear cuts. And as I said in the blog the next day, my favorite part of it is that cussing on the VMAs is kind of like streaking on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because it's like,
not a whole lot of
nobody's going to know you're doing it, but you can still be like, I totally did it. And like, you're still doing it, just as much as you could streak on the radio.
Yep.
Stephen, do you want to share your insight about Pitbull?
Pitbull, the rapper, looks like a car salesman or...
The new guy in Mergers and Acquisitions.
The new guy in Mergers and Acquisitions, right up to and including the slacks.
Red.
Red slacks. And I sort of tweeted that he, resembled a member of Right Said Fred.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of realized that I would have preferred a performance by Right Said Fred, which would have been at least been lively, and was immediately tweeted back by the members of Right Said Fred.
At the Freds.
At the Freds. Oh. Follow them now, because there is the terrible injustice, which I've also tweeted, which is that Pitbull the rapper has like 700,000 followers, and the Freds have 1,800.
This, you're confusing one bald dude for another bald dude.
Right, they all look the same to me.
Your harassed agenda. This is typical. It's a pate crime.
How long have you been saving that?
You can't have been storing that up.
I was not storing that up. Trust me.
If he had stored it up, he would have worked.
But if you remember, Stephen, the difference is that the Freds were buff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Pitbull, not. in fact, they were so buff that they self-identified as sexy. So sexy that their shirts could not contain them.
That's right.
That's true.
That's right. They were too sexy.
It's true.
But just think how much more fun the VMAs would have been if they had just brought out Right Said Fred. Like,
it
just no warning whatsoever. No build-up, whatever. Here is a performance, and it's just Right Said Fred.
It would have appealed to my age demographic as this did. When Tony Bennett came out, this is how old I felt. This thought went through my head. Stand up. Stand up for Tony Bennett, you punk kids.
Stand up for Tony Bennett.
True.
Well, it was interesting because he was part of that Amy Winehouse tribute, which was kind of a little bit strange to me because I felt the fact that the tribute consisted of, you know, the Tony Bennett remembrance and the Russell Brand speech, both of which were nice. But then the musical part of it consisted of Bruno Mars covering a song she also covered.
Yeah. Right.
Which
here
I thought
is a
was
cover of an interesting artist by a non-interesting artist.
Well, here's a song that she also covered, only he's going to cover it not as well.
Yeah.
And I sort of thought that was a very bizarre choice of tribute, when you could have had, like, someone perform a song of hers or, you know, just play a video of her performing. Like, I would have preferred either of them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, the VMAs are what they are. And you know, Katy Perry won Video of the Year with her big...
With a square on her head.
The big cheese block.
With
on
a hat that was trying very, very hard to be Lady Gaga's hat.
Mm. Yeah.
Except that Lady Gaga isn't usually balancing things so precariously on herself.
Yeah. And I have to give it up to David Koff from the New York Times, who had the best tweet of the night when he said it was great how Katy Perry stuck it out after her horrible Tetris accident, which was maybe one of my favorite tweets ever.
Yes,
anyway, so VMAs, we watched them.
Sure
just
did.
For you.
Yes, we
so
did.
We hope you enjoyed this quick tour. The other thing we wanted to cover real quickly is the fact that it is now Labor Day. As you listen to this podcast, it's essentially Labor Day.
We're going into Labor Day weekend.
Labor Day weekend. And we got talking about Labor Day and what we could say about Labor Day, and then we thought, well, not that much. Because Labor Day does not seem to have a unified tradition surrounding it, other than the fact that it is the end of the summer and the beginning of the fall.
But that's a big thing. That's a thing.
Is it? All right. Well, why don't you... What does Labor Day mean to you, Stephen?
Labor Day to me means football. Next.
Football. Why does Labor Day mean football?
Well, unfortunately, unlike in the long ago past, the more than, I don't know, 5-10 years or whatever, it used to be that Labor Day weekend meant the beginning of the NFL football season, and they have pushed it back just to torment me.
Mm-hmm.
I have traditionally associated the holiday with, it's football. It's also my favorite weather of the year, which is it's finally the air that Glenn describes as broth becomes sort of vaguely like, what is that in the air?
Cooler broth.
What is consomme?
That? No, what is that in the air? It's air.
Oh, yes.
That's right.
Yes.
I find fall to be a delightful, the sort of transition from summer into fall. Now that I no longer have to, go to school or, spend the summer not working, I have very fond associations with fall. And of course, I'm sure the labor movement, probably comes into play, but usually it's the grilling movement.
Right. Right. Well, we're not speaking here about the labor movement. We're just speaking about how we experience it as a cultural holiday. It's not to disparage its roots.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit like the way I celebrate every holiday,
right,
which is by eating meat and watching TV.
And not going to work.
And not
exactly.
Going to
work. Trey Graham, what does Labor Day mean to you?
Well, Labor Day, here in Washington, my people celebrate Labor Day by going to Fire Island or by going to Rehoboth Beach.
Yeah,
so I celebrate Labor Day by moving as fast as possible in the opposite direction. Or not moving at all, really. I frequently will stay in town for Labor Day because it means, because that's when no one is here, and I like it that way. I like not going out with people who are overcrowding beaches and bars and restaurants. And so that's what I do. I stay home for Labor Day. And like Stephen, I find it a really nice sort of ease into what I guess some people still call Indian summer. D.C. is, I think, at its most beautiful in late summer and early fall.
I think lots of places are. And I mean, until 5 years ago, I lived in a college town when Labor Day also meant you are getting so old. Because mm-hmm. now there's a swarm of zygotes
yes.
swirling around
yes,
your,
yeah,
the campus area of the yeah. town you live in. But yeah, that's I'm with you, man.
Glenn Weldon, what does Labor Day mean to you?
When I was a kid, I used to fight to stay awake during SCTV. I loved that show. But I would always zone out. I would always fall asleep during one sketch, the Sammy Maudlin Show. The Sammy Maudlin Show was a sketch starting Joe Flaherty as this very loungy talk show host with the pinky rings and the gold chains, and it was all about, you know, unctuousness and insincerity.
Sure.
And I would fall asleep because it wasn't funny. It just went on. It was on every week. I didn't understand why they did this, what they were up to, what this was for,
yes.
why was this funny. Then I saw the Jerry Lewis yep. Labor Day Telethon,
yep.
and it went click. It all came together. It was a revelation what they were doing. It was a lot like when your very churchy Aunt Marion keeps handing you the Narnia books, and you can't figure out why. For years, she just keeps with a quiet smile on her face as she hands them to you, and then all of a sudden, one day, it's like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's that kind of revelation. So I grew to love the Jerry Lewis Labor Day Telethon. Everything about it, because for a long time there, it was this hermetic, stinky bubble of 70s Vegas, mm-hmm. just perfectly preserved with the brilliantined hair and the pinky rings and the ruffled tuxes and the, let me tell you something about this man, and the, ladies and gentlemen, the song stylings of Miss Susan Anton. And here's Fred Trevelyan, he's going to make you laugh. He is not going to make you laugh. He doesn't. Or the legend, Tom Dreesen. No, he's not a legend. He's really not a legend. Just everything about it. You'd stay awake to see him first undo the bow tie. You'd stay awake just to see him, you know, snap at a PA the first time he did that. And then as the hours went by, he would look more and more tired, and he would become a more deeply unpleasant person.
This is a lot in common, by the way, with watching like 86 hours of the Weather Channel.
Exactly. You just want to see the wear and tear on this poor man. So that's what Labor Day means to me. It's
fantastic.
And it's the end of an era. He's leaving. So it's going to be, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do or what Tom Dreesen is going to do for that matter.
Let the legend. He's going to have to be satisfied with being a legend. Well, in my notes for Labor Day, I wrote beginning of school, end of summer.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered that. One of the most random days off, because I never truly, I think because unfortunately the culture does not do as many actual substantive holiday related things, it comes off seeming like just a day off work because there aren't a lot of, you know, commemorations. But the other thing I wrote is the one where I never do anything because Labor Day is always the weekend where I have less fun than everyone I know. Because everybody is always like, oh, I'm having a barbecue. Oh, I'm going to the beach. Oh, I'm going. There always seems to be fun going on
Labor
Day.
Can you not go to a barbecue?
By myself, I can. For some reason, everybody seems to always be having fun. And Labor Day, nor all the other holidays, I have fun. I do something good. Labor Day, somehow, I always wind up sitting there like, I'm not doing anything. And maybe it's just because, you know, maybe it's being locked in this idea of, like, it's the beginning of school, I'm going back to school, I won't have any friends, I'll get stuffed in my locker, you know? But I always have that feeling of dread surrounding Labor Day, like, something is terribly wrong, you know? I never do anything fun. Speaking of never doing anything fun.
This is what's making Linda happy this week.
Yeah, speaking of never doing anything fun, we've come to the part of the show where normally it would be what's making us happy this week. But we thought that we would take this opportunity to briefly reflect not merely on what has made us happy this week, but what has made us happy this summer. So that way we can bring it all to a close as fall invariably comes to put us in its, dry-leafed grip. We can say goodbye to our summer. So, Stephen Thompson, what made you happy this summer?
Wow, the whole summer, not just one week. You know, I think the cumulative effect of a summer's worth of terrible, terrible television, which I found myself just enjoying on a level some might find unseemly. I'm talking about, of course, your Celebrity Rehab, your Hell's Kitchen, your Take the Money and Run from the creators of The Amazing Race, only sort of less exciting, but kind of you know, vaguely engrossing. Your Wipeout, which is now, as we've discussed on the show, a year-round affair. A little bit of your boutique reality TV, your Project Runway, your Top Chef Just Desserts. But
I like that, boutique reality TV. I like that a lot.
You know, the reality TV that people who, you know, will grudgingly watch reality TV will be like, well, I watch Project Runway. I'm just delighted to be in that sweet spot right now. Of being halfway through another thrilling cycle of The Bachelor Pad.
Oh, You and your bachelor pad, so to speak.
Which, that's right. Which, that's another thing making me happy. We are at the point in Bachelor Pad that features that that beloved staple, the Bachelor Pad kissing contest, which is, it's incredibly, I'm not going to lie, explosively erotic. Features the sort of moist, labored slurping of the Bachelor Pad kissing contest. I don't know that the Bachelor Pad. It's sort of it is come to become what summer means to me, which is enjoyably terrible television.
Which you never do the rest of the time.
Which I never do the rest of the time, having never seen Freaks and Geeks or Undeclared.
So
I
now
have
that
seen
we're now
every
we're,
episode of the yeah. Bachelor Pad.
So now that we're going into the rest of the year, you will not be watching all the terrible television. That's a summer thing.
That'll always be the dream.
Right.
It's a summer thing, like a lemonade. It's not something you do year-round. You save it for special, like I do with Starbucks peppermint mochas.
That's right.
All right, I got
it's
you.
It's my eggnog. Mm.
Trey Graham, what was making you happy this summer?
As I may have mentioned once or twice, I read all five of the Game of Thrones books back-to-back in a sleep-deprived marathon. Basically, working on the books project all spring and all summer left me incapable of doing anything but leaving work and going home and lying down with a book. Mm-hmm. I also watched, as a matter of preparing for our bad summer TV podcast, I rewatched all the episodes of Entourage.
Wait, how many?
You did that all in
all of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
Just this summer?
Yeah, because when I told y'all that I had watched all of the episodes of Entourage, it was
you hadn't?
Because I had only recently completed watching all of the episodes.
Holy
I had kind of dropped it after season five or something like that, but I picked it back up.
That was a good thing.
Yeah. No, I, you know.
I mean, I'm not one to talk. Go ahead. Watch your Entourage.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I'm not judging.
I didn't even mention Big Brother.
I'm not judging. I'm just sad for you.
I was judging.
I think this last season has gotten a little more interesting. Anyway, I really am reading a book called All the Stops, The Glorious Pipe Organ and Its American Masters. As I have mentioned, I just got back from Philadelphia, and I saw the Wanamaker's organ in the department store downtown, and it's
And I was going to say, you
are not the only one who's ever seen it.
It is an odd.
You should take that book down to one of those bars with the guys of a certain persuasion.
Yep. And,
and see what the general is.
Many an ingenue has seen John Wanamaker's organ.
It's a very impressive edifice.
Uh-huh.
Did you know that the company that built it went bankrupt under the because they put so much extra work into it that was not contracted for?
Uh-huh.
Hubba hubba.
Yeah. But more than anything else, what is making me happy is an article in the New York Times about Burning Man and the future thereof, which is written in this fascinating sort of we're going to tell you a business story tone. And you get the sense that someone at the New York Times really, really wanted to write about Burning Man. And the only way they could figure out how to approach it was through the lens of capitalism, because otherwise the people who, have come to the New York Times for the real estate articles about what you can get for $4.2 million in Jersey City will not understand the phenomenon that is Burning Man. But mostly what is making me happy from the beginning of summer to the end of summer is that I may or may not have worn a Kermit the Frog swimsuit on more than one occasion.
Good God.
And I am not ashamed to admit it.
But you're afraid to take pictures of it.
That is true. I will not be providing any pictures of the Kermit the Frog swimsuit.
Didn't happen. Glenn Weldon, what's making you happy this summer other than not seeing Trey Graham's Kermit the Frog swimsuit?
Size. None of you will be surprised to know, but perhaps you'll be relieved to know, that you all were right and I was very wrong. Mm-hmm. We have powered through four seasons of Friday Night Lights. Mm-hmm. It is brilliant.
Wonderful. I am raising the roof right now.
As is Catsif.
Love this show. Now, we can't get the fifth season yet because it's not available on Netflix streaming, so we have to, get it like in discs. Like,
like savages.
Like, kind of
like civilians.
Pioneers in olden timey days. Yeah. Would I love this show more if it was just the show about Coach and Tammy Taylor and their creepy giant-headed alien baby? Yes. Yes, I would. And I'm just spitballing here. Maybe the creepy giant-headed alien baby has powers. Right, so we bring in a little out of this world. Right, uh-huh. Bring in a little the creepy giant headed alien baby has a crystal in her bedroom that she talks to Burt Reynolds through. Maybe something like that.
Can I just point out that
Linda
Holmes has only stopped chair dancing in the last 5 seconds?
Did I skip any episode that included in its Netflix blurb the words "Julie acts rebellious"? Yes, I did, because life is too short for Julie Taylor. Matt Saracen never really finished a sentence in four seasons, but I am totally fine with that. I love that character.
Yes.
And so now it's kind of infiltrated our house. When either one of me or my euphemism disappoint one another mildly, like, say, we forget to pick up the dog food, we will stare at each other with that Coach Taylor glare of, you have disappointed me, yet I still believe in you, which I was going to do in this room, but I would just blow the equipment because it is very powerful. Very powerful.
Yeah.
And now I have become the guy that you guys were a year ago. I am the guy proselytizing about this show.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy.
I am feeling the same frustration you must have felt.
Now this is what's making me happy.
With idiots like me saying, I don't want to eat
that poopoo.
God, I just, that makes me so angry when people tell that to me.
That is the most self-satisfied sigh I have ever heard.
I'm filling my lungs with your wrongness.
I'll tell you, I almost went apoplectic this weekend when a friend of mine, you know, she was saying, what are you watching? I was saying, Friday Night Lights, it's amazing. And she said, oh, I saw the first two episodes of that. All the women on that show are really dumb. And I was like, you shut your dirty mouth. Tammy Taylor is not dumb.
You take that back right now.
You take that back right
you
now.
Take
so
that back right now.
The guy who is the announcer during the football games, who explains to you everything that's happening in case you don't know what the hell's going on, this guy is MVP of the show. This guy is the secret of the show's success. In
tremendous.
My
I'm so, so glad. And not only because I feel like I'm bright.
Yeah, well, no, I figured that.
That too, though. Next up, Stephen Thompson. but anyway, so what is making me happy this summer? In the immediate sense, I have to say it would be having electricity and being safe.
Sure.
Since we just experienced a brush with the hurricane. They have the trees picked up in my neighborhood, so I'm feeling like a very lucky duck right now. I only lost power for long enough to have to throw out everything in my freezer, and honestly, damage-wise, that's just not that bad.
Yeah.
But more substantively, I recently started watching the old Helen Mirren Prime Suspect, which I had not watched, but which they sent me the box set of a while ago, and it took me forever to start on them, and I have an excuse now because they're doing the NBC one in the fall, and I thought I should see the old one before they show the new one. Of course, I have a feeling this is going to ruin the new one, but I'm doing it anyway, and that's been fun, and I've been doing that for a while. The other thing I would mention over the course of the summer, which actually involves one of you people, is that Trey took me to the theater a couple times this summer. We saw Follies.
I did.
And we saw Next to Normal, and they were both super fun, and I do not go to nearly enough live theater, so it was very enjoyable this summer to develop the occasional ability to attend the theater again without feeling like I'm completely confused and out of my element. So that was another thing that made me very happy this summer. And then, of course, happy in the last 24 hours, posted on the blog a bunch of videos of people dancing to Hey Ya, because that's what you should do when you're having a day. You just get to the, and you go to YouTube and you look up Hey Ya dancing. And that's what I did. And you find some videos, because if you can watch videos of people dancing to Hey Ya and be unhappy, then you are more stubborn about unhappiness than I am.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the end of our show for the week. I'm so incredibly pleased to have all of you back. It's just like falling off a log or something. You can follow all of us on Twitter now that we're all back together. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. That's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey at Trey Graham, which is Trey with an E and Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O. You can follow our esteemed producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, that's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in-and-out music. And thanks to all of you guys for being here back around the table where you belong.
Oh, you
thank
bet.
You. Thank you, Holmesy.
And thanks to all of you. Come see us at Facebook, which is facebook.com/PCHH.
Which has temporarily become InsomniaCure. facebook.com/InsomniaCure.
It has. It has. Everybody's been
thank
sharing
you for
their
your
ideas.
Contributions.
We appreciate it very much. Thanks for listening, and we will see you right back here next week.